We've already opened the fire exit in anticipation. That's just to let some air in, to be honest, but I'm the nearest to it, so I'm fine. So who's going to be passive, who's going to be active, and who's going to be reflexive this afternoon? That's your choice, that's your challenge. Tempting to be very passive, isn't it, after lunch, but there we are. Right, so this is number 7 of 7. We're nearly there. Whether that's relief or congratulations or whatever, but I asked to be anyway number 7 of 7 in order to hear what everyone else was saying and to see what else could be added to it or what to underline. And I have to say, that's a very interesting experience. Is there anything much left to say? Well, I trusted that holiness was such a rich topic that there wouldn't be a real problem on that. But I have to say, several times sitting there and listening and taking notes, I began to think, help, what's been said? That's been said. What else is there to say? So some of it you'll have heard before, but to hear it in a new way is always good. So treat this as a sevenfold blessing that you've had this week. And I've seen it like wave after wave after wave after wave. We've had 7 waves coming at us, if you like, all building together, all producing deeper understanding of this very, very important topic. Just to get out of the way now, there's a couple of books. David mentioned one that he had found very useful, I think, by Jerry Bridges. And this morning, Jose quoted from A.W. Tozer, and I assume it was from this one, The Knowledge of the Holy. I seem to recognize it because I had it written in my notes as well. And that's another classic if you want to pursue the holy and the knowledge of the holy. And R.C. Sproul wrote a book called The Holiness of God as well. And so these have been sitting on my shelf for several years, and in the past few weeks I did glance through them to see what to say. I also chose to go at the end so to give you plenty of time to do your task. Not calling it homework anymore. It's not the best word. It's your task. And haven't you done well? Yeah? Haven't you done well? Look how full it is. You've probably got everything there. I'm not going to check off, but I did my own homework, my own list, 2 pages worth, going down them. And I might talk about some of them in detail. Just get something out of the way. I was fairly sure that early on the word kiss would appear. You know, greet one another with a holy kiss. If people know that. Someone once explained to me the difference between a kiss and a holy kiss. Apparently it's about 30 seconds. But they didn't say which way. So I'm still confused by it. But actually, I've come to read it as something like this. Greet one another with a brotherly affection compatible with holiness. So that's my translation or take on that. And then did anyone find the holy cow? Now, I don't quite see it there, and yet I do, actually, because someone found the holy tithe and didn't have to make a tithe of all the herds and the flocks. Okay, so 1 in 10 cows was holy. Not too bad. So well done, you did find the holy cow if you found the holy tithe. But what struck me when I did this for myself, and I don't know whether this has come across to you, but I found that with this sort of great long list, that I could actually separate them into 2 categories. I could have put a line down the middle and put some on one side and some on the other. And it made me think that perhaps there are 2 kinds of holiness. And we ought to think in terms of these 2 kinds of holiness. So I'll be coming back to that perhaps a little later, I'm sure a little later. But I do want to start in the scriptures with a passage that was mentioned before. So we're going to turn to Isaiah chapter 6 to start with, please. Isaiah chapter 6. I was fairly sure that this would have been mentioned by someone at some point, so. And of course, it's Isaiah's commission. The holy, holy, holy is the Lord God Almighty. As David pointed out, we're still going strong several centuries later in the book of Revelation, and I dare say still going strong today. The context, though, is Isaiah's commission, as it's called. And it's Isaiah's reaction that is particularly interesting in verse 5. when he says, "Woe is me, I am ruined." You may have got a different translation, probably undone. And again, David pointed out that the sort of underlying meaning of that is deconstructed. The word I had in mind was disintegrated. And I wanted just to get a feel for what Isaiah went through at this moment when he had this tremendous vision of the thrice holy God, that he felt as though he was just falling apart. He was coming to pieces. That's literally what he's trying to express here. You know, I'm on the floor. It's wiped me out. I'm totally taken apart. Because our God is a thrice holy God. No other word is used of God in the same way. We know God is love, but it never said love, 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 or mercy, mercy, mercy. Nothing else is used to describe God in this same high way, which we think we said being threefold meant it was a sort of superlative raised to an extra amount. God is never going to be anything less holy. God will never reduce that holiness. He will never be half holy or a bit holy. He is always going to be holy, holy, holy. And it really did for Isaiah at this point. Left him in pieces. But this is not the death of Isaiah. This is the commission of Isaiah. Isaiah had already been going strong for about 5 chapters when God decided that he wanted to put his servant through this. But it wasn't to finish him off, it was to give him a new start, because he is being commissioned. And our God is not in the business of just tearing people apart, unless he wants to put us back together again. God is in the restoration business. And that's also what his holiness does. His holiness has a sort of twofold purpose. It can both terrify us and attract us at the same time. It should make us feel as though we want to run away from it. It's too much for us. But at the same time, it makes us attracted to it. We're drawn towards it, because without holiness, we don't go anywhere. We're nothing in our lives. So don't be surprised if your feelings towards God's absolute holiness is a very ambiguous one, one where you feel, I don't really want this, and yet somehow I can't do without it. Because that's all really very the nature of it. And to emphasize again something that was said, holiness isn't just an attribute of God, it is the very essence and nature of God. It defines everything that he is and what he does. I don't find a definition of holiness in the scripture. I'm just pointed towards God and made to think about him. And then somehow I try and understand this concept, which is very mysterious, almost beyond our understanding. You know, we often like to ask the question, what is God like? As though somehow we can sum him up. What is God like? What is God like? Well, actually, I've got news for you. He isn't like anything or anyone. The essence of God is that he is unlike, totally unlike. Have a look in Isaiah chapter 40, and it's verse 25, I think. Isaiah chapter 40, yeah, and verse 25. Here the Holy One actually says something, and I don't think it's coincidence that it says the Holy One, because that's an answer to the questions. To whom will you compare me, or who is my equal? And of course we know the answer to those questions, no one. Because the nature of God's holiness means that he is other, he is different, he is beyond anything and anyone else. He isn't like us or anyone else. And his holiness is what raises him into that unique category. We actually understand God better once we realize that he is beyond understanding. He is incomprehensible. And his holiness is part of understanding what that's like. There was a man called Rudolf Otto who decided to make a study across all the different cultures to see what they regarded as holy and what it meant to them. Was there anything in common? And the first thing he discovered was that everywhere he went, where people had something that they regarded as holy, was that they never could fully describe it, explain it, or even show a great understanding of it. There was always that extra. There was a sort of plus factor that was attached to it. And in the end, his conclusion was to coin a new phrase, really, which he came up with the words mysterium tremendum, which I guess translates as something like a tremendous mystery, or even a sort of awful, I don't know whether it's got an E in it or not, but it's such a mystery that it makes us shake and tremble, and it is full of awe. We can't comprehend it. And that's our God. He stands alone in that way. And therefore, yes, it creates a sense of terror, but at the same time, this sense of attraction. We long to be like that. We long for holiness, and yet we fear it to some extent. So if that's your common assessment of it, then that's right. That's something that is meant to be like. Now, I asked you to do this task so that we could try and understand this a bit more about holiness. And I said that I seem to come across two categories here, two different kinds of holy things or whatever. Some things get their holiness directly from the presence of God. They're called holy because God is there. Others are called holy because God has called them holy in the sense that he has set them apart for himself. But some things became holy simply because God was there. So let's take this idea of the holy ground where Moses was. Why was that holy ground? Well, God was there in the bush that was on fire but not consumed. That's what makes it holy, the presence of God. That piece of land isn't holy today, but we don't even know where it is. But if we could go there, I don't think we would experience anything. It was holy at the time, for a time, because of the presence of God. And that was why it caused such a reaction for Moses. What about the holy mountain, for instance, where God came and in the thunder and lightning and he delivered the law, and it was the holy mountain while God was there. But if you went there today, would you find it holy? In fact, there's quite an interesting debate now as to where Mount Sinai actually is. There's probably, if you followed the debate, there's a better option now than the traditional one. As with pretty well all religious sites, you get at least two choices, don't you? But we don't go to any particular mountain. We go to God. And those things became holy because God was there. And that's a bit of a future exercise for you to think about some of these things. How many of them took their holiness simply because God was there? Other things were holy because they were set apart for him in some way, like the pots and the pans, or the incense. It was set apart in a particular way. And that's the other sort of meaning of holiness, the other thing that categorizes certain things. There might be some overlap. There were some very interesting ones. What do you make of, for instance, the holy city? Well, when the temple was there, you could say God was there. That's what made it holy. Is it a holy city today? I think Jerusalem is still set apart for a purpose, because one day he's coming back. So its holiness isn't finished in that sense. So some things are holy directly because of God being there. Other things are holy because they've been set apart for God's use. So what about you and me? Well, the interesting thing is that people tend to be different from all the other things that are talked about as being holy. We are called holy, but we're also called to be holy. Get the difference? We're called holy, but in a way that cannot happen for some of these other things, we are then called to be holy. This is the process of sanctification that has already been spoken about. We're not just called holy and set apart, and that's the end of the matter. We're called holy for a purpose that we then attain towards the holiness of God. Be holy as I am holy, which we have learned is there about 6 times. And it's no surprise that God gave the Jewish people a great deal of revelation on the theme of holiness. It was foundational to their identity as a holy nation, and it's the same for us today, which is why we need to understand this. So we are both called holy and yet called to be holy. So how is that going to work out? How do we make that transition, if you like? Well, we can stay where we are and just be called holy, stay at that sort of low, basic level, or we can begin the process, which we call sanctification, in order to become more like that higher level of holiness which God himself has. And one big clue I found is in Hebrews, and it's chapter 12, and again we had this read and mentioned, but I felt I needed to underline this. When David read Hebrews 12, he was wanting to focus on verse 14. I was so glad you went past and got to verse 14. So that still has something to say on this. I want to focus on verse 10. This is Hebrews 12, verse 10. And again, I'm sure it's been mentioned more than once. And this is a passage on discipline. And we know that we don't like discipline, but we know that we need it. And then you get this phrase in verse 10, but God disciplines us for our good, that we may share in his holiness. You want to share in his holiness? Then we've got to accept and submit to his discipline. For our good, but his holiness, as we move towards that level of holiness. May not be what we particularly want, but if we refuse it, we will stay where we are. And that's the nature of this disconnect, where we are called holy, but we're not yet being holy. How can we move in the right direction? The only way we can is to share in his holiness. I think we've understood that from much of what has been said. And one way, certainly the key way that I'm sharing with you, is that we need to submit to God's discipline. This is his method of changing us more and more into his holy likeness. So I've got a new prayer for you. It's one of those dare prayers. You know, I dare you to pray it. These are the kind that God longs to answer, the ones that he's really listening out for. So why don't we try praying, discipline me, my Father, that I may share in your holiness. Is that a prayer you want to take on board? Discipline me, my Father. Get that bit, my Father, that I may share in your holiness. Remember, God doesn't want to tear us apart. He wants to reconstruct us. And his holiness may seem to want to dissolve us almost at times, but its aim is bigger. It is to put us back together in a better way. Discipline me, my Father, that I may share in your holiness. In fact, why not say, please discipline me? Wow, that's a bit tougher, isn't it? Please discipline me that I may share in your holiness. I believe it's prayers like that that God longs to hear and longs to answer. I find there's plenty of prayers for our happiness, not many for our holiness. Yeah. In fact, it wasn't Augustine that said he would pray, Lord, make me holy, but not just yet. God wants real prayers. And is this a prayer that we can take on board as part of our process of changing from one level of holiness to the others? We don't want to stay holy like the pots and pans. Okay. Now, the holy things, they were very important. Have you ever read how they moved the tabernacle? All those holy things in the tabernacle. Oh, what a performance. What a thing they had to go through. Aaron and his sons, they had to go in first and cover everything up, put all the cloths on, and they used animal skins as well. And the ark had to go on the poles. And when they'd done all that preparatory work, then the Kohathites could go in. These are the heavy lifting guys, you know. But they couldn't go in until everything had been covered up and everything ready to be moved. If they were to see anything or touch anything, they would die. Because this was part of the holy place where God himself was. It was holy because of his holiness. But these are just holy things. By the way, that explains why, was it Azar who touched the ark when the cart stumbled? Whether at that point it was uncovered or whatever, but he shouldn't have touched it. Very clear. So the holy things were very important. They had to be honored because of God's holiness. But none of those things can ever make a proper transition into the holiness of God. Only people can. Because only we have that relationship with him. And he is our Father. And he wants to do this for us. So that is the main challenge, really, I think, of the whole conference, is where we're going on that journey. It's all very well learning about holy things, but what about that process of holiness that God wants us to go on? The actual English word holiness, and I know we've looked at the Hebrew word and things like that, but we get this word holiness, because it doesn't seem to translate directly from it in some ways. If you trace it back through the Old English, Middle English, whatever it is, Anglo-Saxon and so on, you end up back with just hal. And if you know the old-fashioned word hail, you know, hail and hearty and hail, and eventually on into health and so on, that gives you the root idea. And that is to do with integration and wholeness, getting well, becoming better, if you like. And God's holiness is intended to heal us completely, even if at first it has to strike us. But the ultimate aim is always our good, our benefit. Holiness should be the life desired, but usually we desire other things. And of course, therefore we stay disconnected, disintegrated, whatever. If God floors us through his holiness, it's so that he can also restore us through his holiness as well. That's the nature of it. And that's the challenge for us as we go on with God. And I think that's really the essence of what I felt I wanted to share and what others have been saying. I've got a very loose leaf message here. There's some nice tight bits of paper and some other bits and pieces, but I just wanted to end with one more thing, and I think I'll do that because then we'll have a bit of time for reflection before we move on to the next thing. And I hope I say this with a certain amount of sensitivity and so on, but we all know that death for every one of us is coming, and there's nothing more of a sort of disintegration than the process of death, when we leave behind everything we have known, our body, the world around us, everything. But the moment of our death as a believer is a very precious thing. thing. Where do we go? Well, without trying to give a whole theology of something, which is quite complex probably, if you're a believer, you go into the presence of the Lord. Yeah? What kind of presence is that? It's a holy presence. Okay? We go into the holy presence of the Lord so that we can be reconstructed. And that's what His holiness will do. So when we eventually meet the thrice holy God, and like Isaiah, who felt he was falling apart, falling in pieces, we've gone through that process. And once everything has been undone, then it will be redone by our holy God. And at that point, all disconnect will have gone, and there we will be connected to a holy God forever. That is our future. That is our destiny. That is what the holiness of God can do for us now as we move towards that. And it's also what He is looking for in us. So is holiness something to be feared? Up to a point, because it's so unlike, it's so other, it's so mysterium tremendum, if you want to use a phrase like that. If it makes you shake and tremble, then fine. But it doesn't leave us like that. And the more in this life we start to share in His holiness, the more I'm sure one day we will long for that final moment when the difference between being called holy and being called to be holy will dissolve, and we'll be there. We'll be there forever with our holy, loving Father. And that's all I'm going to say. So we're going to spend a few moments just reflecting now and pausing. There's no need for any more words. We've heard all the words, unless God, of course, still wants to speak. So let's just be quiet in His presence for a few more minutes, perhaps.